You know, every generation likes to talk about how much harder things used to be back when they were kids. Like all the people who used to have to walk 5 miles to school in the snow, uphill both ways. We've all heard those stories before. But they had at least one thing that was easier in prior generations, and that was retirement planning. We're going to talk about why it's harder today, and what you can do about it on today's episode. Stay tuned. Another Pilot's Advisor episode is upon us. Walter Storholt here alongside Ryan Fleming. And Ryan, you are the Pilot's Advisor, my friend. We talked on the previous episode about your new background. So pretty. I'm curious. I see the FedEx plane. I'm guessing the True Blue is your time at Air Force and back when you played football, since there's a football player on the image there. But over your left shoulder, to the right where the audience is looking, is that just a picture of an airport or what's the significance?
Okay, I guess I got to turn around and kind of work with you here.
See what you can see first. Yes, that one.
That is actually a picture of the Air Force Academy with the Cadet Chapel, and there's a B-1B Lancer flying over it. So... that was a picture from my graduation year that we have.
Nice.
And I got the C-17 here.
That's just a cool photo there. Yeah, the one with the airplane coming straight at you. Yeah. That's just tough.
And then the funny part is that the True Blue poster back here, that's actually me. I was I got made fun of by all my teammates that year because I was going into our senior year and I was an All-American candidate. So I was the... They normally don't put a person on the poster that has the schedule, and they decided to put me on the poster that year. So it's cool that I have it now. But yes, I caught a lot of slack for that from all my teammates.
You paid for it. What are they doing putting a tight end on the poster?
Well, and to make matters worse, I'm sure if a lot of teammates I've had are now airline pilots, so they'll get to see this and be like, oh, look at Fleming. All right. But
yeah, it's fantastic. Well, for our audio listeners, they're not getting anything out of this conversation. Sorry, guys, you got to go to YouTube if you want to see the visuals of Ryan's new background and the pictures and the planes that we're talking about. But anyway, I was just curious what that one was over that one shoulder. So neat shot of the Air Force Academy and the chapel there. I like that. That's very cool. Well, hey, let's talk about retirement planning, harder than it used to be, Ryan. And this is a big one because some people actually will just sort of plan their retirement based on what they've seen maybe family members go through in the past, and then they'll kind of plan off of that experience. But that's kind of a fool's errand, isn't it?
It really is. And this environment has changed so much. I mean, if you look at, you know, our grandmas and grandpas, or, you know, if we're always going to talk about the airline industry, it used to be very, very easy. I mean, you went and worked for that same company for 30 years. You got your pension. The pension was set up to not have to really change your lifestyle much at all into those retirement years, and it was going to be there until the day you passed. But so many things have changed. I mean, pensions are basically going away. They're gone from all the airlines except for the cargo carriers, FedEx and UPS. But job stability, company loyalty, so many more things are getting outsourced now. You know, it's all about cheaper, better, or more stock, you know, for the stockholders. It's all about the stockholders.
Well, that's a great place to begin, Ryan, because I mean, people used to take a job and work it for, you know, 30 years, 40 years, and they were done and that was it. And now people bounce around. Even I imagine pilots might bounce around to different airlines, different companies. Some are split career between military and then maybe a post-military career with an airline. So even in the airline industry, I would think that that job stability and that company loyalty is not there like it used to be.
Yeah. And it's kind of an interesting dynamic right now, because as far as being a career field, pilots are in high demand and we're getting paid pretty well. When you look at inflation, though, it's still much less than the airline industry of the 80s and 90s. That was like the good time to be a pilot, where what you were getting paid, and you looked at how much things cost. You're probably in a much better situation. However, with cost cutting and everything that's going on, a lot more jobs are being outsourced. So when airlines are negotiating these contracts, a big thing in today's world is scope. You know, having scope to make sure you have a job, because, hey, Delta Airlines, hey, Southwest, whatever it might be, how can we make sure that Delta pilots are going to fly those routes and it's not going to be outsourced to some other company that they can do it cheaper? It's a big thing. Housing market stability. I mean, look at interest rates right now. You might have to move, but what? People lost half of their buying power just in the past year and a half because interest rates are so much higher. I mean, you want to talk about a big player because people aren't selling their houses right now. I'm sure you probably gotten a little of that with your recent move.
Sure. We saw the increase and we traded in our 2.7 or 2.6% 15-year mortgage and unfortunately had to trade that in for something in the fives. We luckily made that change before then things popped into the sevens and eights. But yeah, we definitely went through that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, like, you know, 10, 20 years ago, God, 5% would have been amazing. And now people are like, oh, right. That barely, you know, got in.
Yeah. And to be fair, like, yeah, we have lived in a time before where 13, 14, 15% on homes was a thing, but their total cost was also quite a bit less than what we're seeing these days too. And so that percentage on a $500,000 home, rings very differently, I think, than it did probably back in the, you know, 80s.
Yeah. 13 to 14% when you're buying a house, that's 130 grand is a totally different aspect than what we're dealing with now.
And even with maybe higher salaries and whatnot now, it's still a different
animal. And they've actually done a lot of studies on that recently where the idea of home ownership is becoming less and less of a thing now, where it used to be the American dream. Hey, I'm in my 20s or 30s and I'm going to finally go ahead and buy my first house with interest rates where they are and how expensive real estate is. It's getting harder and harder to actually do that.
Yep, absolutely. That could be a whole podcast on its own, I'm sure. Something else I think about a lot too, Ryan, about how maybe the past is a little bit different from our current years would be, you know, in the past, and you alluded to this with the pensions, but it's this broader concept that we just didn't have to rely on our personal savings so much. A lot of the saving was taken care of for previous generations with those pensions. And your personal savings were a little bit of an afterthought, where now it's really, that's the bulk of what you're going to live on.
Well, and sadly, that is a reality, and we don't have a lot of personal education on how this has happened. So what has happened in the industry is pensions went away, and you know they've put up these 401ks that we don't have a lot of generations that have gone through this. And so a lot of the airline employees out there, a lot of the pilots, they don't really know what they're doing. And when I start telling people how much you have to save for that income replacement at a safe withdrawal rate, it blows their mind. For every $1 million that you have saved, it's only going to spit out about 40 or 50 grand a year. I mean, that is insane. And when people hear that fact, they go, wow. And without a pension, you realize you've got a lot of saving to do if you don't want your quality of life to diminish or go down in retirement.
Well, because the people that are starting to save in that million plus world are not going to typically be spending only $40,000 a year on their lifestyle. They're probably going to be used to living on a lot more than that. So that is a big eye-opener.
Well, let's do the math, Walter, and I'm going to put you on the spot to do some math. You want to get your calculator out, or you think you got this?
I've already clicked on it. I'm ready.
So I do. I talk about this. I go, okay, well, great. Your family is living a lifestyle right now. And let's say this particular airline pilot's making $300,000 a year.
Okay, I'll take it.
And we're not even taking into account taxes and inflation for later on because we don't know what those are going to be. All right.
Okay.
But just at a $300,000 level, how many millions do they have to save to try to keep that same lifestyle in retirement?
Like I'm trying to replace $300,000 a year.
Yeah. So $1 million is going to give you about 40 or 50 grand. So that's $6 million or more.
That is a lot, Ryan. That's hard to wrap your brain around.
That's the reality.
Yeah. It's a lot of money to be prepared for, to handle, and to save up on the front end and not be spending it and enjoying your life along the way. So that's got to be a tough landscape for people to be in. Speaking of landscapes, there's also this thought, and I'm curious to know if you think this is true, that the investment landscape, just the options that were available to people of previous generations, it was a lot simpler and that was a good thing. What do you think about that? Was it simpler? And is that a good thing that it was simpler, if so?
Well, this is where there's some good and some bad. I feel like there's a lot more investment options out there. Technology is allowing us to do a lot different things within portfolios to take advantage of the markets and how quick-paced things are. But the problem is, because there's so many more things out there, I think that investors get overwhelmed, they get confused, they get taken advantage of. And it's really hard to not notice that squirrel of Bitcoin or whatever it might be that they want to speculate and gamble with their money over there. So it's good and bad. I think having a lot of options has brought down expense ratios on what you can invest in. There's easier access to the markets, but it's a lot easier for you to throw your retirement away, making mistakes, trying to do it on your own as well.
Yeah, it's a good point. All right. What about, we talked about this a little bit with the higher interest rates on a previous episode in terms of an income planning mistake. We've covered that before, but that's definitely a way that things have been a little bit different in the past. But we've also seen this be up and down. We were just talking about mortgage rates specifically, how that's changed over the decades.
Well, I think the biggest problem I see with this right now, like today, is I hear high interest savings account all the time.
Okay.
And what it is, people are very content putting their cash or putting their money in a high yielding savings account because it's giving them 5%. Okay.
And compared to the point one we were getting there for
but
a while.
The problem with that is that it's still a broke mindset. And what I mean by that is you are still going broke very, very safely because the cost of capital is at 5%. Banks have to give you that much just to hold your money because that is the cost of capital. Now, as interest rates go up, the expected return within the markets go up as well. So by you putting your money in at 5%, you're still holding that same baseline and it's based off prime and adjustments and where interest rates are. Banks are only paying that to you because they have to. Okay. But you are still going broke very, very safely. And so when we think about long-term investing, you have to let your money work for you. You have to get that long-term growth to get that $6 million that we're talking about if that's your number. Now, for airline pilots, it's a little bit better because they have these companies that are putting in 17, 18% of whatever you make. Okay. So they're really helping you get to that number because they took away your pension. Imagine the guy off the street that has his own 401k or is having to save for himself when you don't have any company matching. That's a big number to get to.
It is hard to pile it up. Hey, real quick break from the podcast. We want to talk to you about the Retirement Toolkit. If you have not gotten your copy yet of the toolkit, listen up closely because Ryan is going to give us the details of what's in the toolkit. You even have one on hand, Ryan, that we can show people and some of the things that are inside of it and what kind of information can people learn?
Yeah, absolutely. If you go to retirepilots.com, you can get a free retirement toolkit and we'll actually give you a free analysis of your portfolio so you can really see what's going on. But as you can see, we got some air mail here.
Nice.
That's what the toolkit looks like. Some of the things that are in there. There's a couple tax planning strategies with Zach Smith at Pilot Tax. We look at long-term records where we've got a 21-year track record of outperforming the S&P 500, GIPS certified. We can show you that. And of course, I write these with big crayons, big fat crayons for pilots. I mean, there's some Marines and Army aviators out there, but I got a couple books. Couple books I've written that you're going to get to talk about retirement planning, how you should plan for your retirement, talking about taxes and tax planning,
nice.
Some other goodies, advice matters, how to let an advisor help you out, some of the data behind how much more you will have in retirement if you hire a professional. What we try to do is to try to get pilots not to speculate and gamble with their money. And what I want to give you all the tools you need to not do that. Look at the data. It's completely free. We're here to help you out.
Very cool. So this is a free toolkit that you're going to get. And I don't want to gloss over that fact that you mentioned at the beginning. It also comes with a free portfolio analysis that you'll do after people get the toolkit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you have no interest in doing anything else and you just want the free materials, I'll put your name right here. We'll send it out to you. But yes, you do get a free portfolio analysis. I think most of the people, after they see the content that's in there and read the book, they want to talk to us and we can analyze your portfolio, see if we can add any value. The numbers don't lie. I mean, we're going to find out if we can add value and we'll get on a Zoom call with you. We'll go through it. We'll teach you. We'll show you the numbers. And I like to call that the IQ test. At some point, the numbers don't lie and you look at it and go, hey, if we can help you out, you know, and do something better, if there's a better way, well, let's help you implement that strategy.
Very good. So no obligation to work together, but you definitely get the free toolkit, great resource information. And then if you want to take next steps for that portfolio analysis, you get that as well. So a lot of great freebies there, Ryan. We appreciate you offering those to folks in the first place. I know a lot of people throughout the existence of this show have ordered them over the years, but we still got a good chunk of folks that probably are new to the show or haven't gotten their copy of the Retirement Toolkit. So be sure to get yours. Again, the way to get it is to go to retirepilots.com. retirepilots.com. That's retirepilots.com. And right there on the homepage, you're going to see an opportunity to get that toolkit. We'll also link to it directly in the description of today's episode. So look for it there as well. That's your retirement toolkit here on the Pilots Advisor. Thanks, Ryan. We're talking about past generations, how it compares to planning for retirement nowadays, the big differences, are they good, bad? What about lower healthcare costs? Certainly was a lot less expensive when prior generations were going through retirement. One, just cumulatively, they weren't living as long, so it just wasn't expensive to live that extra 30 years from a healthcare standpoint. And I guess the cost of procedures maybe was less back then as well.
Well, we've beat up inflation and interest rates. We beat that up, but let's talk about that. Healthcare costs are skyrocketing. Okay, so not only is the cost of care getting so out of control, but what's you know, our healthcare system has gotten better and people are living longer, which all sounds great, except for now you have to plan for that 30 or 40 year retirement, where you have to have enough money to live off for 30 or 40 years before you pass. In previous generations, you had a much shorter life expectancy, which, you know, is why pensions probably worked out okay. You retired and you maybe lived for 10 or 20 years. Well, that's changed. And so not running out of money in retirement is a huge thing. And it's just an even steeper hill to climb in today's generation. And, you know, I'll throw in Social Security there as well. Social Security used to be a thing that worked out well, and it was a big income replacement vehicle because people weren't living that long. But now people are living longer and longer, so they're drawing off Social Security more and more, and the baby boomer generation are not paying into Social Security anymore. They are retiring. 10,000 baby boomers, I think it's like a day or something. It's something crazy.
Yeah, it's a crazy number.
And they're all pulling from Social Security. So we have a big, big problem where not only is Social Security going to get reduced, it's going to have less and less of an income replacement ratio that we were hoping for. Think about that.
That's a great point. I think about my wife does not contribute to Social Security in her job. They have a separate, I guess, a 401A plan. Yep. That they use. So just a totally different design and structure. And it's hard to think of the ramifications. Well, maybe it's not that hard to think of the ramifications of all that in the future for Social Security.
And I hate
writing's
to say
on the wall
it.
A little bit.
I hate to say it, but if I had the option to not pay in Social Security, I would be better off saving my money and doing it on my own than hoping I get some of it later on.
Absolutely. And who wouldn't make that trade?
And I don't like to talk about politics, but when we look at legislators and what's going on in the direction of our country, I really think not only is it going to be reduced, but it'll probably be means tested at some point. You know, Walter, you've done a great job of saving and doing all this stuff. You don't really need that Social Security you paid into and got taxed twice on already. You don't need that. Let's give it to Joe over there. He hasn't worked a day in his life. He needs it.
Tax it again, right? or something. Yeah, I like that. One other little element I can think of here too. I'm curious, Ryan, since you work with pilots every day, if you're seeing that in the pilot community, and it's this concept of sandwich generations. So where the parents are moving back in with the children while the children are also maybe still taking care of their children and have them on the payroll. So the three generations living together, or even if they're not living together, maybe that middle parent, could be a young baby boomer or somebody in that middle range, still taking care of both generations on either side of them.
There's some scary stuff going on in what it really is, I see, is the family dynamic right now. You know, we talk about sometimes how it skips a generation. I think I see a lot of successful airline pilots where they paid for their kids to go to school, go to college. They've graduated and suddenly they're living in the basement back at home. You know, and there's lots of reasons for that. I mean, interest rates are really high. It's harder to buy your own house, or, you know, rental costs are high in this environment. You know, you can get a job, but that job is still not going to be paying a lot more like it used to, where, you know, now on top of that, you might have student loan debt that you're dealing with. So I'm not saying it might be a harder situation for individuals growing up right now, but you can't sacrifice your own retirement to continue to take care of your children. And that's what I worry about and what I see with a lot of my clients, where they're bringing their kids back in. They're still paying for their kids. They're still paying for their cell phone bills, insurance, you know, and they're not able to save for themselves to make sure that they're going to be okay in retirement, with the hope or understood conversation that their kids will take care of them once they get, you know, where they need that long-term care. Well, guess what? Can I get that in writing?
Yeah.
I
mean, and then many people are still also taking care of the adults in their life, their grandparents, their parents.
Absolutely.
And so you're also trying to help out that generation that took care of you and helped you out. But yeah, when you're reaching both directions, that's got to be really taxing on folks.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, it's definitely scary times. And we haven't even talked about our national debt and how that could affect things going forward.
Yeah. Yeah. Go kind of point back to that same conversation with Social Security and how that plays into it and taxes and all those kinds of things. Definitely didn't have the debt where we have it now.
Yeah.
For some of those prior retirement generations.
Well, I still think about tough love because I talk about that a lot. My job is to be honest with my clients or prospects and say, hey, you're behind, you're ahead, you know, whatever it might be. And I still remember what my dad said to me when, you know, had graduated from school and everything else. And he said, yeah, son, you can come home. You can live in the basement. And I was like, well, Dad, we don't have a basement. And he goes, exactly. And so I got it early on. Like, oh, okay, I'm on my own now. So
I love it. Yeah, I got the message too when I moved to college. And then when I came back home for the first time from college at like Thanksgiving that year, my room had been turned into the guest room. Like it didn't have any of my personality left on it. It was totally changed.
And back then we had keys to our house and suddenly the locks are changed. You know,
like, there you go. Okay. Yep. I got the message pretty loud and clear. Yeah, so.
Which is probably the best thing they did for you.
Oh, absolutely. No doubt about it. And it was really cool to be able to then like, I mean, I took a lot of pride in then eventually, I'm sure you had the same thing. You come home, visit, and Dad slips you a 20 or something out the door. You know, hey, here's some gas, mate. Take care of this. And I took a lot of pride. And on the day when he went to hand me a 20, I finally said, I'm good. You keep it, Dad. You keep it for gas, well, you know?
Absolutely.
Like that was a badge of honor to be able to do that, you know?
Yeah, before my dad passed, when we went out, I bought. Like, I took him to lunch. I took him to dinner because, you know, it's given back for all those years that, you know, they teach you to be a contributing member to society. And I do think there's pride in that where, hey, now it's switched and I'm going to take care of you.
Yeah. It's funny that you say that, and this could lead us down a whole nother tangent, but I just feel like I have to strike on it, and then and we don't have to belabor the point, but it's just really funny that you use that verbiage. You know, growing up, my mom would always say, what do you want from me, or what do you want out of being a parent? And she's like, my job is to make you a contributing member to society. So it wasn't, I want you to be happy. It wasn't any of that. Now she's HR, and she was very matter of fact about a lot of those kinds of things, but I think that's important. Like, first, I want you to be a contributing member to society, you know.
Well, and we've changed because, you know, now it's so gray. I want you to be happy. I want you to feel, you know, whatever.
Chase your dream or, you know, whatever it might be.
I never got that. It was, you know, I want you to stand on your own 2 feet. I want you to have it better than I have it. And I want you to be a contributing member to society. And there was a lot more of that, you know, kick me out of the nest and I'll eventually figure out how to fly. Versus the little bit of the mentality of the failure to launch now, like, oh, you can stay here. It'll be fine.
Yeah. It's got to be tough. I mean, I'm not a parent yet. And maybe you've dealt with these challenges, Ryan, but it can be tough to see, I would imagine, your kids go through pain. And I think you don't want them to have to experience that. But then when you have so much pain avoidance, you learn so much through pain and discomfort and unfortunate circumstances and things not going right. So when you eliminate all of that pain and all of that bad stuff from life, that makes it then tougher to deal with it when reality still hits you.
Exactly right. And if you truly love them, you want to have them go through that pain where you're still there watching, you know, you still got the kind of the bumpers on the bowling, you know, laying there to make sure they don't go sideways and off on the edge. But I mean, learning how to deal with difficult circumstances and I mean, that's a huge part of learning how to deal with life because you got to get knocked down and get back up. And I would encourage anybody out there to be tough on their kids because if you're tough on them, they're actually going to deal with life a lot better.
All right. Well, that's a perfect segue into our final point, Ryan, as we've been talking about how previous generations had retirement planning a bit easier than we do today. And this last one is about education and financial literacy. And there's a school of thought that it was easier to achieve financial literacy for prior generations. Would you agree with that? And what do you think about that goal of someone to achieve literacy these days in retirement planning? It seems like you talk about all these other options and moving parts out there. It is probably a little tougher to do.
Well, that's why it's so important for me to educate my clients, my prospects, because you can't turn on the news, you can't turn on Fox Business or, you know, whatever the show is and get facts. It's all fear and greed. You need to go to the academics and the books of how things work. And we don't do a good job of teaching them personal finance in schools. I think it goes all the way back to that. I mean, you look at all these junk classes that we have kids take, and really personal finance is probably one of the most important things. So we got to get a lot better at educating our youth on financial issues. And there's so much data out there now online that you don't know what's right and what's wrong. I mean, you can look up anything and find 100 points for it and 100 points against it. And so it's really hard to navigate nowadays. I think it's with the influx of information, it's much, much more difficult.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It was kind of nice when our options were limited a little bit in some of these ways. Like you said earlier in the episode, there's trade-offs to all of these things. But that's one area where I definitely see that trade-off in a big way.
Absolutely.
Well, if you need help with financial literacy, Ryan provides a lot of different ways that you can get that financial education. We talked about the Retirement Toolkit a little bit earlier on in the show, but don't forget to get your copy of that if you've never ordered one. It's got books, it's got special reports, lots of great information in there as well. We've got past episodes of this podcast that you can watch or listen to and learn lots of great different elements of the retirement and financial planning world from all sorts of different angles. If you want to learn about taxes, Ryan's done a couple of great series with Zach Smith of Pilot Tax. Talk a little bit about that angle. Just a couple of examples of the educational resources that Ryan offers. There's more at retirepilots.com. So go poke around there. Check out some other great things that you can learn about and add to your own financial knowledge. And you can always get in touch with Ryan directly by calling or texting him and asking your personal financial and retirement questions at 843-475-3038. That's 843-475-3038. And again, retirepilots.com. All the contact information is in the description of today's show. So whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on your favorite podcasting app, you can find those resources there. Ryan, you are the Pilot's Advisor. Thanks for the great advice today and the advice. And talk to you soon, my friend.
Hey, it was good talking to you, Walter. I hope we didn't sound too much like the old bitter old man, but I think it is good to talk about how things have changed.
Instead of back in our day, it was in our day right now, we have these problems. Yeah, we might have been a little complaining today, but that's all right. I think other people will jump on board with us on that.
Good convo.
Awesome. Thanks, my friend. We'll talk soon. This has been the Pilot's Advisor. Thanks for listening and watching, and we'll see you next time.